The following podcast is an edition of the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, which was recorded live on the show floor at Macworld Expo on Thursday, January 8th. The audio overmodulates for the first just couple minutes until I was able to go over to the recorder and bring the gain down. So bear with us for the first minute or two during the introductions, and then as soon as John starts talking about something, I was able to go over and fix it. All right, on with the show.
When do we start? 5 minutes ago?
Three.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for coming. This will be Mac Geek Gab number 186.
For January 8th, 2009.
Good. Thank you.
For those of you, how many of you were here? I know I see some familiar faces. How many of you were here the other day? Okay. Wow. So it's, okay. So it's not the same, exactly the same crowd, which is good. Though we are talking about different things. We are here live on the show floor, for those of you listening at home, in booth, the Learning Center, which is booth 3236, which really won't matter if you're listening at home, but that's where we are anyway, so the record may stand. Today, the focus of the show will be John and I talking about things that we found interesting and notable on the show floor, and then any tangents that come up, and then we'll take some questions in. And when we say take questions, we mean we'll take questions, anything. Now, the rule is, though, and we work this out with the other people, so we got to make sure we have it straight. Any question is acceptable so long as any answer is acceptable. Is that fair? We can do that? Okay.
Well, we guarantee you to give an answer, it may not be the right answer.
Or even a relevant answer.
Yeah, okay.
And plus, I'm going on about 90 minutes of sleep.
Yeah, you didn't sleep. I thought you'd be exhausted.
I know.
Was anybody at the party last night? He was going nuts. My gosh, I don't believe you were.
I fell asleep at 3, woke up at like 4:30, and nice to see you. Here I am. And I did a session. Was anybody at that session this morning at 11 a.m. over in the West Hall? No, they're all still over there in the West Hall, aren't they? Okay, so it's a whole different vibe. The sessions are worthwhile, you know. It's an excellent part of Macworld Expo, and it really, I know it costs a little bit extra, so it may not fit into budgets or travel plans or any of that, but, and I don't say this simply because I do them, there are sessions I go to as well. All the presenters are excellent, so, all right, there's my pitch. I don't get anything from them for saying that, but I'll say it anyway. All right, okay. So John, what did you find on the show floor?
All right, we're going to dive right in. I'm going to give some things that I noted on the show floor. Some of these you'll see articles on MacObserver.com, of course, about these, and some I may write articles. I'm trying to write them as quickly as possible. The first thing that I saw, maybe it is one of the cooler things here. I believe they're over here in this hall, MicroVision. It's a projector from MicroVision, a small portable projector. I don't have the name of it off the top, but it's MicroVision. You should stop by. But it's really about the size of an iPod. And the cool thing about it is that it uses lasers. So rather than using lighting and optics, it uses lasers. The one side effect of this is that you don't need to focus it, which is really kind of bizarre. When you see these guys show it, no focus required. No matter where you are, close, far, it just projects. And because it's using laser light versus other light, you're going to get some colors that you probably couldn't get from a regular projector. Or bulb-based or LED-based.
So it just projects flat on any surface? Is that basically it? So if I was on an airplane and I had my iPhone with me, I could project it onto the seat back in front of me or something? Really?
Yeah, I don't see why not. It has a lithium-ion rechargeable battery. It'll go about 2 hours, so you could probably get most movies.
Sure.
A lot of movies, but it's pretty innovative. And again, they're using lasers, a new technology here, because I've seen some other portable projectors, and they really don't do that great. Like 3M makes one, and they don't do that great unless you're in like total darkness. So I think this is nice. It'll take composite or VGA input, and actually, I think it's a perfect companion for an iPod, which they are demonstrating it with. So
I gotta check that out.
It's one of my picks. Check them out.
Do you remember how much it is, John?
It's going to be available in the summer, and well, here's the pricing. I think it'll be under $500. So. Wow.
Yeah, that's true. That's not bad. I mean, considering the technology that's there.
Yeah, I mean, the whole projector space is actually advanced. I mean, I remember when they were as big as a suitcase, and now a lot of them, you know, are very, very small. But this is the smallest that I've ever seen. Yeah, like the one here.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
No worries about that thing walking off.
Okay, what do you got, Dave?
Okay, so I'll start with one of my favorite things that I've seen here, and that is things. They are, it's a company called Cultured Code. They're over in the shanty town behind the Apple booth there. Task management is something that is lacking on the Macintosh. Simple task management. And what they have done with things, they just released it for both the Mac and the iPhone. You input tasks into it. If you put them in on your phone, it automatically syncs when both apps are open on Wi-Fi on the same network, so you put them in either place. The best part about it is it has all these great organizational abilities, and you can use scheduled. You can set a task and set not only a due date, but a date when the task starts, right? So let's say you want to go buy the new iLife, right? And you definitely want to have it by February 1st when you've got to start making your presentation for something at work. But, you know, it's not going to be in the Apple Store until Friday. So no sense putting it on the to-do list now. I'm just going to keep pushing it off day to day. So you put a start date and then a due date. It's got tags, categories, all kinds of stuff. And you can filter by anything. But the best part about it for me is the app is fully functional and won't get in your way if you don't want to use any of that stuff. If you just want to pump tasks in and tick them off on a list, just like you were writing them on a piece of paper, but instead of paper, you're putting them on a computer so that it, you know, in theory is more reliable, it works. And the UI, the user interface, is flawless for just putting tasks in and doing it. So perfect kind of thing for somebody like me. I don't want too much structure. I don't want an application to impose too much structure on me for this kind of thing, because I want to work my own way, and this app really seems to do it. So I'm excited to start using it on both the things. So it's over there in Shantytown.
Okay.
I say that $49 for the app, I think, and $10 for the iPhone app. And you can use them independently. One does not require the other. You know, if you're comfortable managing your tasks on a piece of paper, then maybe the iPhone app is enough for you, and you don't need it on your Mac. So, yeah.
Okay. Next, here's something neat that I saw. I think this would be great for people that have a lot of old video on videotapes and stuff like that and want to convert it over to your computer. And, you know, you've seen that they have these devices that are dual VCR, DVD burners and stuff. So, but this is from Blackmagic, and it's called the Video Converter. And what it is, on one side, it's a USB. Within it is a DSP that does all the conversion and all that. And now the other side are video inputs. You can either do composite, S-video, or component video, which is the highest quality, so it's not HD. So you have those three sources. And it comes with software that does the encoding in real time. So, that, you know, obviously can't go faster than the thing plays back. But with these three pieces of, you know, these three inputs, it'll, at the end of the conversion, boil it down into, the software asks you the device you want to send it to, so it'll scale it appropriately for an iPod, an Apple TV, or, you know, full resolution. But I think it's neat. I believe it's $150, but it's an all-in-one video conversion solution, so if you got some old stuff on, you know, VCR tapes or something like that before they totally deteriorate, this would be a great thing to help you move your stuff over to digital format.
Cool. That's awesome. All right, FileMaker 10. Yeah, FileMaker comes out with a new version every, you know, 16 months or whatever it is, and they add some new bells and whistles, and yeah. FileMaker 10 is a whole new world. It's not a whole new world. It's the same world. Let me step back a little bit. So FileMaker's been around so long, and so many of us have been developing on it, that we sort of became accustomed to the brick walls that existed in FileMaker and really even stopped complaining about them and just learned tricks for how to create databases that did things that we needed to do. And if you haven't ever developed a database in FileMaker, it is very simple to get involved. But you can do a whole lot with it. And we run our contact backend, distributed contact backend for the Mac Observer on one, and then with our advertising business, Backbeat Media, everything we do is on FileMaker, all our invoicing, everything. And we cooked them all up ourselves. But there are brick walls in FileMaker, and you kind of have to learn tricks and figure out, you know, cool things to go around them. Because programmers or developers got used to doing this and stopped complaining to FileMaker, FileMaker really wasn't hyper aware of limitations in their development environment because nobody complained. They just sort of, okay, well, it's, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning and I got to figure out how to do this, so I'm just going to go ahead and do it. I'm not going to wait for FileMaker to come out with a new version or whatever. It's got to be done. So they started paying a lot more attention to this through their support boards and that sort of thing. And they've added some great stuff into FileMaker 10. Script triggers. So now when you go into a field, you can have it trigger a script to do anything, and previously you kind of had to really find a back way around with weird validation scripts and that sort of thing. And then they changed the user interface. So instead of it being this weird thing where there's this left sidebar that didn't really ever fit but made sense if you were used to FileMaker for 10 years so you didn't care about it, they moved it up to the top. Really what they did was they made all of us that have been developing in FileMaker for 10 years hate them because it's great now, and if only we were starting now. So they've created the barrier to entry for FileMaker. It was low to begin with, but the barrier to entry for creating advanced apps in FileMaker is now even lower. And it really is a cool piece of software. Don't be afraid of it if you're thinking about databases. Try out Bento if you want something very simple that's related to contacts or calendars or to-dos and linked in with your Mac. But otherwise, FileMaker is awesome. It's really, really easy to use. It's a whole graphical thing. You're just dragging things around and putting them in place. So it's great. My story.
Okay, next. This is a product from Ecamm, which they claim is the world, and I believe them on this, it's the world's first Bluetooth webcam. And it's pretty straightforward. It's a webcam. You can use it with iChat. You can use it with Skype. And it uses Bluetooth, so you need a recent machine that has what we call a Bluetooth 2.0 EDR, enhanced data rate, because Bluetooth, at least the early versions, is relatively slow. It does 640 by 480 and audio. But I think it's really neat. It was actually kind of fun to watch the demo because people would pick the thing up and start running away with it, and you would see on the screen they were streaming to, you know, all this random video and stuff like that. But I would think a neat thing to do with this also, like I've done this sometimes when I chat with friends with my MacBook, is I'll give them like a virtual tour of my house. Of course, the thing that terrifies me is that I'm going to trip and drop my Mac and destroy it. So in this case, instead of destroying an expensive Mac, you drop a $150 Bluetooth cam and you're probably not going to destroy it. So that's pretty innovative, I think. I think it'll go up to about 100 to 300 feet, depending on the Bluetooth adapter. If you use the built-in one in the Mac, I think you get maybe 100 feet. If you use a third-party Bluetooth adapter, you can get up to 300 feet. But I think it's really neat.
Cool. Security cameras, baby monitors, that sort of thing?
Sure, sure. Right? But just then, yeah, it has a little tripod, standard tripod stand, so you can pretty much put it anywhere you want.
And it's battery-powered, you said?
Yes. Yeah, so it has a rechargeable battery. I forget the battery life.
Can you
can
you plug it in? Do you know?
Well, I think if you plug it in, then, yeah, you don't have to worry about it.
Okay. Cool. I got to pick something next, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, or I can do another one.
No, I'll go. That's fine. We'll have you do two in a row in a minute. if they had a bed back here, I'd take a little snooze. No. how many people here have iPhones? I know it's the Mac Geek Gab, but yeah, okay. You're all using Google Mobile for iPhone, right? Yeah. Okay. That thing blew me away the first time I used it. I was in Austin. I had downloaded it one morning. I was going to meet a friend for dinner, and I was driving down Mopac in the rental car and wanted to look up the address. And so I put the phone to my ear and I said, Uncle Billy's, Austin, Texas. And by the time I had the phone in front of me, it had the phone number, which I could click and dial, a map, and the address right there. And I've probably used it 100 times since then. It's gotten it wrong maybe 5. And I've searched for some things that are non-standard words. I don't know how it's doing it. My guess is what they're doing is it's taking what it thinks you said and cross-referencing that, just like it does when you type something in, and if there's a typo, it says, did you think you meant this? And it just assumes that's what you thought you meant and puts that up as the guess. I don't know that, but it's got to be. It's one of the coolest things I've ever used. It really takes advantage. And I think Google's actually breaking some rules with it. I think they've got access to some APIs that not everybody else does. But hey, it's all fair in love and iPhone development.
No, reportedly. And you know,
and
these guys are...
Well, so,
but these guys are smart because... Well, I think what they're doing in this case, though, is that they're offering it for free, but what they're doing is trying to fine-tune their speech recognition engine, because as far as I know what it does, it's beaming your audio to their server, tries to figure out what you're saying, and then comes back to you.
Right.
But the other thing I heard about is that apparently there was some controversy, because reportedly they're using non-standard
APIs. That's what I was saying.
APIs.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah, clearly, well, the guess is that Apple gave them some, you know, access. But, you know, okay.
Yeah.
So what?
Promotes
Apple uses non-standard APIs for their apps. They can...
Yeah.
I mean, there's no rules. Might upset some other iPhone developers, but that doesn't seem to bother them. What's that?
Proximity.
The proximity thing.
Right. Thanks.
Well, they said that, you know, they also said, well, it's really using the accelerometer and it tells when it stops, but it doesn't. It's definitely using proximity because I took it in the air and I did this as though I'd put it up to my head and it didn't beep, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to do two here because it's from the same company, but I can go through them quickly.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
All right, so Verbatim, which a lot of you guys know, make storage products and disks, and I remember using their floppy disks. Anybody remember 5 1/4 floppies? All right.
Elephant.
8-inch floppies? Oh, boy, okay. And I don't know what came before that. All right, so they have two things that
big
are neat.
Tapes?
Yeah. Tape, okay. Oh, PIT, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and I remember, yes. I've told a few people. The first computer that I used was a PDP 11 series when I was in middle school, and they did have a teletype with a paper tape reader, and oh, it was terrible. The cool thing, someone actually geeked out even then, and they figured out not only how to read from the paper tape, which I think, it was a thin tape and it had maybe 7 holes, but someone figured out how to program it so we could make little banners. So you could punch in things, and they were taped across the place, and... Yeah, those were the good old days. All right. So two things.
It took 45 minutes to load BASIC, right?
Yes. Yeah, from what I recall, so a little tangent here, but from what I recall, you loaded BASIC off of paper tape, and it took a real long time. And these machines were rather sensitive to static, so if you zap the machine, it would forget BASIC. And then I was one of the little geeks in middle school that were always hung out in the computer room, and there were a few others of us, and one day they got this magical thing called an Apple II. And they brought us in the room, and they switched it on, and BASIC was there. I'm like, where is it? They're like, oh, it's in this little chip. And from that point on, I decided I wanted to be an engineer because I wanted to figure out, how does this work? It was just so cool. It was a quantum leap. I mean, going to a little chip with BASIC and ROM. I think it was a Microsoft BASIC, even back then. All right, so back on track here. Verbatim has two products. One is they call their speaker keyboard. And this is kind of an interesting keyboard. I haven't seen anything quite like it. So it's a regular external keyboard. The things that it has, though, as the name implies, is that it has speakers in it, so you can listen to your music or whatever through it. It has a little bass boost button if you want to boost the bass. It also has controls for iTunes, so if you want to do play, pause, forward, and back, you can do that. But then what I thought was really interesting is just like on some of the MacBooks, it's backlit. So if you're into typing in the dark, you can now type in the dark and listen to your music. So that's a neat product. I don't recall the pricing off the top of my head. And then the other thing which I think has been kind of scarce in the Mac space is that, of course, there are flash drives galore. And actually, we like getting a lot of our press kits now. I mean, pretty much instead of lugging all this junk home, or physical stuff home, we get a tiny little flash drive, and I have more than I know what to do with now. But they have what they call the Store-and-Go Micro. There are 2, 4, and 8 gig versions. But what it has is both a public space where you can store your data and, use the drive like you would want to when you want to share things with people. But it also has a private, password-protected, and I'm going to gather encrypted area of the drive where unless you provide the password, you can't get to the data. So if you happen to use your flash drive for sensitive stuff and you lose it, this would probably be a good drive to have. And I think it's reasonable. I believe the 8-gig version, I think it's about $50. So, so if you want to be security conscious, if there's anything on your flash drive you don't want to share with the world, maybe you want to check this product out.
Cool. All right. Toast 10 from Roxio. Anybody a Toast user here? Any TiVo people here? Yeah. Okay. So Toast has added TiVo support in the past. Now Toast 10 allows you to directly publish stuff from Toast out to the TiVo. So it's got a whole lot more interaction happening there. Of course, this is something you could do if you knew the magic keystrokes and knew how to hold your mouth just right. But they're really... The UI, the interface for this is revamped. I don't have a whole lot to say about it other than I use Toast regularly, and Toast 10 now it so much easier and so much better to use. So that's all I got to say. But go check it out.
Excellent.
It's good.
Okay. Oh, my writing is sloppy here. I hope I get the name right here. Okay, Model Baker from Widget Press. Now, I'd like to ask, how many people, does anybody here do iPhone development? Okay. Yes, it sounds like you've done some of the APIs. Now, I don't know about you, but I do C, I do VB, things like that. I would say that Xcode and Interface Builder and all that is probably not the best, not the most pleasant environment that I've worked with. I find that there's a lot of things that you got to kind of handcraft or know the secret handshake in the code if you don't want it to violently crash. What these guys have is something that I think is kind of innovative. So at first I thought this was another tool, because right now I think Xcode is pretty much your only option for developing iPhone apps. These guys have a platform where they can build, which is it lets you build a web application, which you access with a browser. But if you're accessing it with the iPhone, you cannot. It will be loading it in the browser, but it looks exactly like an iPhone application. It follows all the conventions, you couldn't tell the difference. And I couldn't either until I asked the guy. I'm like, no, that's an iPhone app. He's like, no, it's a browser loading in Safari that's offering an app. Now, you can't do everything that you can through Xcode, but if you want to do any sort of database-driven, web service-type applications, WidgetPress, stop by their booth. They're by the Apple booth in the developer pavilion. But the other thing is that you don't have to go through the hassle of registering as a developer with Apple, because I'm actually still trying to go through that for my day job, and it's sometimes they take their sweet time in approving you. Now, the only downside is that I guess, your app will not appear in the App Store. It's just going to be a web URL. But if you want to deploy an application to people through either a web browser or through an iPhone using the browser, then this looks like a nice product, and I don't think it's too expensive. I don't have the pricing here. But check it out if you want to dive in and offer things that people want to use on their iPhone.
So I am a hack Photoshop user. I am not good with the software. I have to use it sometimes. And more often than not, when I have to use it, what I need to do is I need to take a picture of someone and mask out the background and then lay it on something else, on some other background, or maybe just a white background or something like that. And this is one of the hardest things in the world to do in Photoshop, because, take somebody like John, right? He's got all this cool hair happening on the top of his head. Well, that against this background, that sucks to mask out, right? Because you're going around, you're zooming in, and you're moving the mouse. And I don't have a stylist, because I'm not a Photoshop guy. I'm not an art guy on the Mac. I play the drums. I bang things. I'm not very good with the fine tuning. So, I always hate that. Well, over in the South Hall, Fluid Mask 3, it's a Photoshop filter, and it's built to do exactly this, to the point where you just you pull in the picture. So I pull in John and this crazy background, and then I'd kind of draw just very broad strokes just around his head to sort of say, this is the area that I want to focus on and ignore everything outside of it. Okay, great. And then it does what it thinks it needs to do, and then you fine-tune a little bit. But again, just pounding out broad strokes, nothing. It's no big deal. And then these guys must be like math geniuses to have figured this stuff out. And it doesn't take very long. It goes through, and it will preserve transparency in like wisps of hair that are out there, where it's not solid hair. It is solid hair, but the light's sort of shining through and the background shining through. Doesn't matter. This thing will deal with it all and leave you with this head, the floating head, right, out there. Awesome stuff. Like I said, I don't get really gaga about Photoshop things much because I don't use it, but that's why I got gaga about this thing. And I don't remember how much it costs, so I apologize for that. But they are in the South Hall, on the right side, second row in from the right, about a third of the way toward the back. So, what? Oh, is that good? Is that okay? All right.
Okay.
Fluid Mask 3. Yep, go watch the demo. They do much better than I do, because I can wave my hands around. They've actually got the software, and they can show you how it works and all that stuff. So it's even cooler than what I'm doing here. So,
cool.
I understand if you're just going to go leave now. So I would. The software is that cool. So,
okay. You may want to try the magnetic lasso in Photoshop.
Oh, yeah. I've tried
I don't know
that.
If you see my mad Photoshop skills on my Twitter icon, is that I've been able to put different hats on the Apple that I'm holding.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it doesn't do it does a pretty good job, but yeah. No, this sounds like this goes beyond that.
Way beyond, yeah. Yeah, but that is cool. And your Twitter logo is cool.
Thank you. All right, what do we got here next? All right, this is pretty cool. I think this is in the Dr. Bot area, and definitely go by Dr. Bot. I mean, they represent a lot of really, really cool vendors, and a lot of these products here are from that area.
Yeah, they have their own. It's like Shantytown, but it's like upscale Shantytown. They've got like a little path that you walk through. And,
yes.
And, but, you know, I said this the other day. I'll say it again. It's those little developers that have those diamonds in the rough sometimes, you know, and I know you're going to tell us about one of them here. It well worth your time to just sort of snake through there and, you know, just kind of scope it out. Some of the stuff's going to be junk and some of it's going to be good but maybe irrelevant to you, but there'll be those little things where you say, oh, yeah, that's what I've been looking for my whole life. My life is now complete. I can check out. So.
Okay. So the product here, it's from Thermapack and it's called Heat Shift. What this is, to reflect a bit, now, especially those of you who have MacBooks, if you've ever used it and placed it on a flat surface or sometimes, like before I go to sleep, you know, I'll be laying down and put it on my chest. But a lot of times, the problem is that you're blocking the ability of the computer to radiate the heat from that. And a lot of times, like also if I'm using it like my dining room and I put it on a plastic placemat, when I pull it off of that, the placemat's pretty warm and the Mac gets really hot. Now, it's probably not going to destroy the machine, but it's probably not good for it. One solution is that I've seen a lot of companies offer these, you know, stands that'll elevate the machine and then you get all the airflow. What these guys have, though, is a pad. And it's kind of textured, so it provides some airflow, but then what it has in it is this secret proprietary, they wouldn't tell me what it was, but it's apparently some sort of crystal, and as it starts heating up and then starts liquefying, so what it does, it's a surface that you can put your Mac on, but it actually helps dissipate the heat, and they claim that it'll knock about 10 degrees off of the temperature of the machine. So, so yeah, again, it can't hurt to help get the heat off of your Mac because I guess there is a potential if you block it that it could overheat and it wouldn't be happy.
Well, the good news is when it does overheat, it just shuts off typically.
Yeah, there's thermal. What is the one I use? Thermograph, I think it is. Thermograph 10. There's a utility that you can use that'll actually show you the temperature of all the temperature sensors in your Mac. And a lot of them have, I mean, they're like, I think, 6 or 8 of them in a lot of Macs. There's one for the hard drive, the processor core A, processor core B, things like that. So you can actually watch that yourself. And I'm going to get one of these in the goodie bag that they're sending me, and I'm going to see if it does knock some temperature off there.
Cool.
So I would imagine it would certainly help extend the lifespan of your machine or just prevent catastrophe.
John's going to do one more.
I am.
Do you have two more? How many more do you have?
I got 3 more.
All right. So he's going to do 3 more. I'm going to do 1 more, and then it's going to be question time. So, get your thinking caps on. And we mean it. Anything. You know, if it's a question you would have called into the show or anything like that, we're happy to help. We had fun with it the other day, so we'll try it again here and see how it goes. So.
Okay. We had fun, yes.
Yeah, right.
All right. Orbicule Undercover. I don't know if you've heard of this. They've added a new feature. What this is software that you install on your Mac, and it will basically help out in the event that your Mac is stolen. And it'll do a number of things. So what they've added now, so what happens is that you install the software, you get a code, and if your machine is stolen, you will call the company, and they will start helping, and also, you know, probably call the police. They will start helping you track down the machine. Now, the feature that they've added in the new version 3, which is going to be available later this month, is the ability to use Skyhook Wireless. And some of you may be familiar with them. Skyhook is a service that the early iPhones use, the iFi Explorer card uses, and it uses Wi-Fi base stations and cellular towers to help. So it's kind of like GPS, but it doesn't use GPS. It uses different radio technologies. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't work exactly, but it's better than nothing. So what they've done is added this ability. So what happens is once the machine's been reported stolen, these guys can activate this feature, and then if it gets near any access point that Skyhook knows about, it'll give the latitude and longitude of where the machine is. That's a good piece of information. The other things it'll do is that on occasion, it will take a screen snapshot of the machine. So if the person's using the machine and they're emailing or chatting or something like that, you're probably going to figure out who they are. Another thing it does is every once in a while, it'll take a snapshot with the EyeSight camera. So you're going to get a mugshot of the person that stole your machine. I think it's really neat software. I believe it's only $49, so it sounds like a good deal. And then some of the other things it'll do, so if these things fail, then what happens is they invoke what they're calling Mode B, And what mode B will do, or plan B, they call it. What happens is that they'll send a signal to the machine, and what will happen is the brightness of the screen will decrease over the course of 30 minutes until it goes totally black. Why would you do that, of course? Because then the person's going to think it's broken, and they're going to bring it to a repair shop. Once they bring it to the repair shop and it gets on the network, it's going to phone home using the prior technologies. And then I think what happens is that once that mode is invoked and the machine is turned on again, it'll paste a big message on the screen saying, I've stolen, please call the company here, and because this machine is stolen. And the thing that I got a kick out of is that reportedly, I didn't listen to a demo, but it'll also scream out this message using audio messages saying, I'm stolen. So you know, it's Orbicule is the company, and it's called Undercover, and the new version is 3, and that'll be coming out on the 20th. So it sounds really neat. And, you know, Macs are certainly attractive targets to steal. So for $50, I think it's a great piece of insurance.
They've got a story on their website where they actually show pictures that you know, a stolen machine took and sent and phoned home with and all that good stuff. It's actually pretty cool. So I think it's Orbicule.com, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually, we just posted an article about it, so you can go to macobserver.com and get the details. But I pretty much covered it. All right, another thing here from Blue. I saw this very quickly, but it looks kind of neat. If you have a, I don't believe it works with latest iPhone or iPod, but with prior ones. But Blue, as you may know, makes a lot of really quality microphones, and this is called the Blue Mikey Portable Recorder. What it is, as the name implies, it's a portable recorder and playback for your iPod. So if you'd like to record audio notes with your iPod, this will let you do it. It has three different gain settings depending on if you're talking close or trying to record a room full of people, and it'll also let you listen, so it also acts as a speaker. They're kind of tiny, but if you're in audio notes, this is a product that'll let you do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any
more?
Yeah. Well, you have one more, but I'll do one.
Well, that's
and
my last one.
Oh, that's the last one.
That's
one. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I'll do this. Have you guys ever used Slingbox? Do you know what it is? Yeah. So I'm getting some yes and no.
I don't know what it is. Tell
okay.
me.
Okay. The idea is you have your TV set up at home, and you probably get a DVR and recording shows for you, and maybe a DVD player, and then you get your cable signal coming in. And then you go travel somewhere, and obviously we all travel at least to some extent, or we wouldn't be here. And you're staying in a hotel, and you know it's nighttime, and there's nothing else to do, and you go to turn on the TV, and in the hotel they get like weird. Why is it that hotels get weird channels? I mean, it's like hotels get channels that seem like 20 years ago cable. I mean, we have thousands of channels in our homes, and hotels have like 6. Why is that? But anyway, what's that? I guess they don't want to pay for it. But even if I pay like nothing at home, they'll send me, you know, 40 channels or something. In a hotel, you can't get it. It's weird. But anyway, so the Slingbox, what it does is it attaches to your setup, and really you kind of plug it in like it's a television. So all the outputs from your, you know, your DVR, if it's a TiVo, or even your Apple TV, right, all go into the Slingbox, and then the Slingbox goes to your television. And it also has infrared transmitters. And what it does is you go, and then you plug it into your network. I think you have to do it wired. So you plug it in, you wire it into your network, and then you, from your hotel room, you get online with your computer, and you log into your Slingbox, and then it brings up a little remote control, and you start pushing buttons, and you turn on your DVR, or you turn on your Apple TV, and you say play, and what it's playing appears streamed over the internet on your computer. Well, now they have two things. Now they've got it in HD, assuming you have the bandwidth to stream HD, and it works really well. I've done this before. I don't have one, but a friend of mine does, and I've done it before. In fact, I used it here at Macworld last year, if anybody listened to that crazy long raving podcast we did about me trying to watch that Patriots game here, and I finally watched it on a friend's Slingbox back at home. But now they've got a client for the iPhone. So do the same thing with your iPhone. Get the remote going, and then just sit there and watch. So it's pretty cool, and it's one of those things. We don't have one. I keep thinking, gosh, you know, I don't travel a whole lot, but sure would be cool. The only drawback, of course, to the Slingbox is it is actually controlling your home entertainment center. So if there's someone at your house and they turn on the television, you might have like remote wars going and that sort of thing. So you need to coordinate that with your with the people back at home. But that's you know, but it could be nice. You could watch a show with your spouse, right? You're here, they're there, and you know, whatever, right? It's like a nice little moment together. What's that? Apple has approved it? Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. Sling for the iPhone, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Great. And then the last thing I have on my list here, Matias. M-A-T-I-A-S. Matias. Thank you.
I think so.
Okay, that sounds reasonable. They've introduced something new. So they've made for a while a folding keyboard, which basically folds in half. You know, it's nice and portable if you need to bring a keyboard on the road. What they've introduced at the show here is a version that does Bluetooth. So if you happen to need a wireless Bluetooth keyboard and you don't want to lug around a full-size one, but it expands to a full-size one, and I tried typing on it, and it is full-size. I was able to type at full speed. So so if you want it, like if you have a mini or something like that, and you want to have a, or even your, I don't know why you'd want another keyboard for your MacBook Pro, but
some people don't like the keyboards in the new MacBook Pros.
No?
No.
Okay. Well, this has a nice feel, so, you know, check it out. But so Bluetooth is a new feature with their portable keyboards now.
All right, so it's question time. So while you're all walking up to the mic, there is one thing I want to tell all the listeners at home, assuming this is getting recorded. Michael Johnston has not been converting the last several episodes of the podcast to AAC. Brent Cameron, who on Twitter is Truck Lover, has been, and he's been doing a great job, but apparently there's still a bug in the iPod 3G series that if it has an a mono AAC file that is not a consistent bitrate, so a variable bitrate, as soon as you start playing the show, it will crash. And so the last three podcasts, you got one? Can you confirm that it did this? Okay. All right. Well, he has now reconverted them with a static bitrate, and they're all uploaded. So you can go re-download the AACs for the last three shows, and hopefully those will work. Let us know. Find Brent Truck Lover on Twitter if you need help, and he can help you too, because we're sort of running around, and I might not get your email right away. So. All right, you've got a question. That mic should be live.
Hello, it's live, yeah.
All right, say your name.
My name's Mike.
Hi, Mike.
And I've got two questions. The first one's simple. Have they made the scripting in FileMaker 10 any more straightforward? Because I've always found it to be just completely opaque.
I'm going to guess, I mean, that's sort of a judgment call. They've made some changes to it, but no, it's still FileMaker scripting, so...
Okay.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Okay, real question now. I have a MacBook Air, and I have never been able to get it to network on a reliable basis with anything. I go to various Starbucks. One of them, a lot of times it'll be, you know, you hook up to the router, you try to, and it'll say it needs a wet password. Well, it doesn't need a password, because I can do it, even get it on my iPhone. And then I go to the other Starbucks, it doesn't do that. And then I haven't been able to get it to use that little adapter for Ethernet, the USB to Ethernet adapter. I've tried three of them. It always says it's not connected. Is there something I can trash or reset or something to see, other than just nuke and pave, which is what Apple suggested I do?
I would bet that nuke and pave would solve this problem. And I don't think it's hardware, because it's happening with two different network devices. So either you've got a really weird fry on your motherboard, right? Or it's software. But yeah, no, I would think what I would do is I go into the system preferences, into network, and delete everything you see there. And then if it doesn't automatically re-add Ethernet and AirPort and all that, just manually re-add them in. That would be the first place to start. Otherwise, I'm sure there's the driver files out there that you could replace. Maybe reinstall a combo updater. Have you tried that?
I've tried a couple
times. Okay, all right, so that didn't do it. All right, so yeah, go yank the devices out.
Yes, that was what I was going to suggest. Okay. Another thing I was thinking of also is that I believe this is one of the class of machines where if you start it up and you hold D, that the diagnostics are on the machine itself, system diagnostics. It may find something. It could be a flaky, it sounds like it could be a flaky hardware problem. Again, I'm software, so I always blame the hardware. But
right. It does seem to be reliable. If I go to this Starbucks, it doesn't work. But if I go to that Starbucks, it does work.
Well, no, not, they not all, all Starbucks they all have
you
free
can,
Wi-Fi.
But yeah. they all you can get onto the router.
That's
you
true.
You have to sign in and pay for it, but you have right. to. Yeah, it won't even get to the Safari login
yeah.
screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Now, is it? I'm curious. Is it? Does it only happen with? Oh no, I'm sorry. You said that, so. These are unencrypted connections. I'm just wondering if it's maybe based on a.
No. These are all unencrypted connections.
Okay.
That, you know.
Have you tried a separate user account?
Yeah, I've tried that.
Okay.
It still doesn't work.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I wouldn't have expected this separate. But sometimes, if it's, you know, yeah, if this is. One level deeper than that, I think.
I just didn't want to completely do my whole system again.
You know, I did that back when I got my MacBook Pro middle of last year. It's not as bad as you think. At least it wasn't as bad as I thought. I had avoided it for like 5 years. I mean, it was time. It took like 3 hours to, you know, get the apps installed.
Yeah.
It's like, huh.
Or
I should have done this a long time ago.
Or, you know, if you got a Genius Bar nearby, you know, make an appointment, see what they, because it should still be under warranty, I would think, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, it's definitely
awesome respect.
Apple Care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Mike. Uh-oh, he's got it written down.
Oh,
we're in trouble, John.
Well,
just get close to the mic just so the people at home can
I'm not real technical savvy, so I wanted to make sure I wrote down the responses I was getting. This has to do with certificates again. I know you've been talking about them a lot lately.
We've had people say they're going to unsubscribe if we talk about certificates again.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
I don't think you've addressed this particular issue.
What's your name?
Bill.
Bill. Okay, yeah. So everybody blame Bill.
Yes. I have a new domain, and a certificate came up with a gold border, and it was asking. It was indicating that the certificate may or may not be valid, and should I accept it? And then I followed the instructions in the Apple help menus to get it into the keychain permanently. And when it came up to add to it, it suddenly had a blue border. Instead of a gold border. And I know that had some significance. I had read somewhere a couple weeks ago that it had. Anyway, so that was kind of weird, I thought. But anyway, it would, when I tried to add it, the response was unable to import. It's already an existing item in keychain. So I thought, well, I'll toss it and then bring it back in.
Good.
And I got the same response again.
Okay, there is, off the top of my head, I believe there's something called keychain repair. I believe it's either a separate utility or I think it's an option within the keychain utility. It sounds like it's corrupted. So try, I believe that's what it's called. I don't have the utility in front of me, but I know there's some sort of repair.
The certificate itself is corrupted?
Well, it sounds to me like maybe the keychain. Well, the certificate's stored in the keychain, but if the keychain has some inconsistencies in the data, this could help fix it. So that would be my suggestion.
Okay.
All right, I'm gonna teeter off the cliff in the dark here on this one, John. So I need your help because I don't have a computer in front of me. But I know when I started mucking around with certificates on my machine once, doing something just like you're talking about, I couldn't get it to accept the certificate without asking me every time. And what I finally realized is I had gone into the keychain preferences, and I think for certificates there's something called OCSD validation or verification or something, and I had changed those settings from their defaults because it sounded like the right thing to do. And I was wrong. It ruined my life for about 4 hours while I fought with this thing, and then and I set them back to the defaults, and then everything was fine. So it's somewhere. It's OCSD. Does that sound like something to do with certificates? I mean, it sounds good.
Yes,
but, okay.
I'm trying to remember what that stands for, but I think that there are a number of methods where you can check with someone to see if a certificate is valid.
Right.
One is called a CRL, certificate revocation list, and I think OCSD is a different protocol to do that. And I think I've run into the same thing. A lot of times, if you enable either of those things, though they should work,
right.
I think a lot of times they don't.
Yeah,
I think that was your conclusion, is disable any sort of checking for...
Yeah, so they sound like the right thing to be on. And it, I guess in a perfect world, right, but you were not there. So, yeah, thank you. I knew if I wandered off the cliff in the dark, John would save me. Sir?
Sorry. The ears just cracked me.
Yeah, it's a birth defect. Sorry.
Just for the listeners at home, well, you had to be here.
The man has pink bunny ears on his head. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Come on. We could have left that out. It would have been funny. No.
The birth defect is believing I can win stuff by wearing pink bunny ears. That's the problem.
That's funny.
My name is Mark. I have one of the earliest MacBook Pro Intels. Actually got it shortly after the announcement several years ago here. Got Boot Camp installed on it. Occasionally have to go over to the Windows side, so I reboot, no problem.
Ew.
Usually on the Windows sides involves updating viruses and, you know, installing service packs and such, which I have to do occasionally. And then, of course, I'm tired of that, and so I go back to the Mac side. So I reboot normally, and it's defaulted to boot in the Mac, so it starts up on the Mac side, and I get this bizarre color display. Kind of grays and greens, and like the setting or the bit setting has been set differently on the computer. And I go into the display preferences. It says the bit settings are set correctly. And so I go, well, maybe it's something about switching back and forth between Mac and Windows. Go back and reboot on the Windows side. Now Windows is displaying this bizarre color thing. Changing the display settings in Windows does nothing. It says it's set correctly. So,
how do you get it back?
Sometimes
or
I just
or is that the question?
Well, no. Sometimes I just boot back and forth.
Shake it real hard. Well, wash it with hot soapy water.
Well, when it first happened, I thought the display was shot. Occasionally, this doesn't always work, but doing the essentially zapping the param and letting it go three times,
right.
That doesn't always work. It seems that going back and forth seems to get it straightened out. It's just very annoying having to boot and boot and boot. And so I'm just mystified. It does not always happen. It just happens occasionally. So,
But it doesn't happen unless you have switched. Right?
That's so, right. If I normally stay on the Mac side and reboot, no problem.
If you
problem.
Never went to Windows, it wouldn't,
that's
it wouldn't
right.
happen.
It's just switching to the Windows side. Okay. I'm about ready just to pull the plug on Boot Camp and go to Parallels so I don't have to do the reboot. So,
because if it was happening any time, then we'd start to blame hardware. But if it's only going back and forth, it's harder to blame hardware, Mr. Software Engineer.
Yeah, That was my suspicion. Well, one thing I was going to ask you or suggest is if you boot off of something other than the hard drive, like either a DVD or an external hard drive, that could help isolate it down to it. Could be a flaky graphic chipset. I don't know.
It still could be because it's possible that the Mac is sending at a certain refresh rate, right? You know, you see that in there, 75 hertz or 60 hertz or whatever it is. So if it's sending it, say, 75 hertz, and the Windows side is set to 60. I know it's an LCD display, and really the display shouldn't care, but...
The color scheme kind of reminds me of the old Windows Safe boot mode, where the colors are all screwed up when you start up in it, but both sides seem to say from the operating system that it is set the way I set it.
And if you set it to something else and then go back, it doesn't matter?
It does its usual thing of flashing the screen.
Sure.
It's just showing the same old thing.
Mm-hmm. Toss the display preferences file.
Yeah.
Start fresh with that, maybe.
It only happens coming from Windows to the Mac is what would start it?
Yeah, that's right. Mm. It doesn't happen going from Mac to Windows. So I don't know if the
Windows
does
something.
Okay, so
it could be software. And so it comes up and looks okay, and then during boot up is when this happens?
Absolutely.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Okay, so that could be software. I could see that. A combo updater.
Okay.
You already zapped the PRAM.
It only happens occasionally, so it's not enough to throw the machine away yet. But.
I do believe they stress the video hardware. Yeah, so you got it on probably your install CDs or DVDs.
I think yes. That's
if you hold down D, I think, while you're booting that it'll start that. And that I think, goes through a lot of different funky patterns, and it may identify a problem.
Yeah, because if that triggers it into it, then you'll know it is hardware and it's some... path with, right? Because if you do the video test, it's going to go through a jillion different modes. Mm. And so if that kicks it over, then you know it's not software because you're running it from diagnostics.
Well, next time when it randomly happens, I'll try those things.
Okay.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, there you thanks. Go.
And the other thing is, you know, it may be just about time for a new Mac.
Next year.
I don't know if I get the 17.
Mr. Apple
the new
shareholder.
Yep.
All right. Any other questions? Or are we? I think we got time for one more, maybe. Oh, here he comes. Here he comes. Hey.
Ranger Lefty from the Black Rock Rangers again. Anyway, a real simple question. In 25 words or less, what do you think is the future of Macworld Expo without Steve and without Apple?
25 words or less. John?
Well, I didn't get any Steve time this show. No, I've never gotten Steve time. Personally, I haven't even visited the Apple booth, I'll be honest. Everything that I found is interesting and cool. If you'll notice, nothing on the list here was from Apple. I personally don't believe that the lack of Apple would make the show any less enjoyable. I mean, I meet hang out with the same people every year, have a great time, find new innovative products, go to some great parties, things like that. I don't see Apple's presence or lack of presence as influencing that at all. Unfortunately, it's almost turning into a self-fulfilling prophecy, is that we did have, I think, two major vendors, shame on them, Adobe and Belkin, bow out at the last minute. What I'm afraid of is that if too many people bow out, it's going to snowball, and then everybody's going to bow out.
Yeah,
and so I'm hoping the vendors will. Now, I know trade shows are hard to justify from an ROI standpoint. It may not be the most effective way to spend your money in order to gain customers and make money, especially in these trying economic times.
I think you've used your 25 words.
Yeah, that could have been a few more. I'm sorry. But I had to get the thought out.
Yeah, no.
So what do you think?
Well, I'm going to, even though he borrowed my 25, I'm going to, all I'll say is he's right. There's no reason it can't work without Apple, but we all have to remind everyone else of that, especially the vendors and all the other attendees, because let's face it, it's chicken and the egg. Vendors aren't going to come if they don't think attendees are going to be here, and attendees aren't going to come if they don't think the vendors are going to be here. So, you know, next year, IDG and any of us that want to help them need to really sell that yeah, we're coming, and it doesn't matter to us that Apple's not here. So there you go. Other Steve's
the
here,
good
right?
Steve.
The good Steve. Yeah.
Well, no, the other Steve's good too.
Any last question? Or are we? I think they're going to kick us out of here anyway. But we can muscle.
Oh,
a little
somebody
bit.
Reminded me today on Twitter. How do you get in touch with us?
Oh.
Now one
we're
way,
reading
of course,
from the script.
So of course, one way is to call us at 206-666-GEEK, which is
4335.
I think you can email us
feedback@macgeekgab.com, and you can Skype us to.
Matt Geekab?
That's right. Okay. How'd you guess that? And we always like
iTunes comments.
There you go.
And give us one or two more, because we really want to trounce Christensen. I went to a Bird of Feather session yesterday, and the thing is, somebody brought this. I was like a half an hour late. I wasn't sure if it was over. As soon as I walked in, I think it was Allison. Thank you, Allison. Mentioned this. Adam was not aware of this. So as soon as I walked in the room, he saw me and he went, "You!" And everybody turned around and looked at me, and I was like, "So, what did I do?" So, I got to get back at him. So,
that's great.
No, but listen to Adam too. Adam does a fine podcast.
Yeah.
So, thanks.
I think our shows complement each other nicely, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, all right. Thanks, everybody. Don't get caught.